Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter. This is Love Sport.
Chich!
Chelsea!
There we go. What a start to the Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport Radio. Myself, Matt Beadle, here with the guys from the Chelsea Fancast, Stamford Chidge and Jonathan Kidd. There we go. Right on cue. Right, chaps, before we get into it, I'm just going to go through some team news because, of course, the Premier League is starting again tonight. It is back. Liverpool hosting Norwich City up from the Championship in that first game of the season on a Friday night. Not sure how I feel about that, but that is just the way that things are these days. So Liverpool lining up with Divock Origi in instead of Sadio Mane, obviously only just returned from African Nations Cup duty. So he is on the bench. In goal, Alisson. Then you've got Trent Alexander-Arnold, Joe Gomez, Virgil van Dijk and Andrew Robertson. No surprises there at the back. Jordan Henderson, Fabinho and Gigi Wijnaldum in the middle. Salah, Firmino and Origi, as I said, in place of Sadio Mane. So Liverpool looking pretty much as you'd expect them to look, bar Origi in for Mane. Norwich has started with eight players who started the final championship game of last season. Krul, Ahrens, Hanley, Godfrey, Lewis, McLean, Tribal, Buendia, Stiepermann, Cantwell and of course Timu Pukki up front. Will he get the goals in the Premier League this season? Will he score the goal at Anfield to kickstart Norwich's Premier League campaign? Of course, Norwich were the last team to ever score a goal in front of the Kop. Jeremy Goss all those years ago. What nostalgia we have here, chaps. And speaking of nostalgia, I've got two chaps who know plenty about that.
Who are very old.
Very, very old.
Both of us.
I'm actually older than I was last week.
So
am I. Yes. I am literally, because I've had a birthday since last week.
Congratulations.
Indeed. Basically, I know why Liverpool are kicking off on Friday night. Tonight, in fact, Matt.
Go on.
It's because it's more bentness from UEFA to give them two extra days to recover before they face the mighty Chelsea next week in the UEFA Super Cup final. If you had to ask that.
No, but you could say that what's happened is that because Liverpool won the Champions League last year, they wanted to have them on the Friday as the first game, and it just happened to be a coincidence.
I thought that the Premier League fixture computer was as random as my scheduling for the Chelsea Fancast.
Yeah, I don't think so in terms of Sky and marketing.
They cheat like me, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think they decide, I think we'll have them
very
first.
Possibly. But, yeah. Very possibly.
Yeah. No surprises to get a Liverpool dig in early doors. We will, of course, be discussing the Super Cup later on in the show. But first, I need to get to the bottom of this, chaps.
Yes.
Who was it? Which one of you was it?
Did what?
Who's been writing reviews about David Luiz's restaurant on TripAdvisor?
Have you seen, come on. I don't know if you've seen this.
I've seen them.
This is hilarious. I've got to say, it is funny. Can I read one of them out that really, really tickled me, actually?
So, of course, just before you do, Chelsea defender David Luiz, of course, moved to Arsenal, as we know. Yeah. And some Chelsea fans, in their wisdom, have taken to TripAdvisor to slate his restaurant, Babbo, in London, an Italian restaurant, I believe.
Is it an Italian restaurant?
And
I believe Willian has shares in it as well.
He does.
So you're kind of doing
absolutely.
Which is a bit strange. But Chidge, of course, reviews have been left. Let's
read
some out.
Well, there are so many, but let me just read the most pertinent ones. My favourite one is from William Holmes. He gives it a 1 star out of 5 review.
Yeah, what a surprise.
He says, curly-haired owner never there on Thursday nights for some reason.
Amusing.
That's good. That's clever.
Amusing.
He'll be playing at Europa.
Indeed.
Europa League football with the Arsenal.
The Arsenal, yeah.
Liam Welby says, disgusting food was horrible, slow service, and saw people having photos with a big rat that had curly hair. Wouldn't recommend. Which I thought was, and I quite like Robert Hall, really. It was very simple and to the point. These are all 1 star reviews. Absolute rubbish, full of snakes. So there
you go.
The
thing is, though, they're
I think it's quite clever. If you're going to have a dig at somebody, like that.
But why have a dig at him?
Oh, because they're all children and they're having a bit of a laugh,
aren't they? If you were going to go to the restaurant, you'd have to know that they were all Chelsea fans. But it might do a terrible disservice to his service. You might discover that he's has to close
down. I think, on a serious point, I think... You know, I mean, this is the thing. We always come back to this. It's the great reducer. This is the tomato ketchup of 21st century life. Social media. You know, if you live in a bubble of social media, you get a completely distorted view of the world. So, you know, if you're a lazy journalist, for example, Not insinuating that journalists in football are lazy at all.
No, not in the slightest.
You know, some of them are my great friends.
Some of your great enemies. Friends.
Friends. Yeah. But, you know, if you lived in that social media bubble, you would walk away thinking that all Chelsea fans are mildly psychotic and wish nothing but ill on anybody who has the temerity to scorn them. But, of course, this is not true. I think I actually watched the press conference, back on video before the show, and it was very interesting, you know, what Frank had to say. And I think clearly, you know, Luiz was not happy that he was not going to be first-choice centre-back this season. And given, A, his age, and B, the performances he's been putting in. And I mean, we were saying this, Jonathan, not last week, when I said there are concerns that I have about, you know, a back four and Luiz playing in a back four. There was a reason why Conte went to a back three, having been rinsed 3-0 by Arsenal.
Indeed.
And Luiz was in the defence, and he is susceptible to counter-attacking football.
Yes.
And Frank's no idiot, and he's realised that, and Luiz doesn't like it. But you have another interesting theory, which I think is also very pertinent, about him not taking it from Frank.
I think we discussed earlier that it's because he was a member of the... he was his equal. And when you have a...
Back in 2013.
Yeah, because they played together, and it's very difficult to take orders from somebody who is also, Frank has become probably slightly more, not aloof, but more managerial. Mm. And if he's your mate, as he has been, and you don't agree with what he's doing, it's very easy to get that, take the hump out of that. It's very easy.
Matt, you're poised to strike, like a snake, in fact, not like a David Luiz snake.
I mean, guys, I mean, you've gone into it, to be fair. I was just intrigued to know what the general consensus about this is, because this is a player who had, on the face of it, did very well for Chelsea. An erratic player in David Luiz.
David Luiz gets a pass from me. I personally, I'm not having it that he's rubbish and he can't defend.
A 40-yard pass.
A very good, yes, a 40-yard pass indeed. He gets a pass. He won he helped. He played in the Champions League final on one leg. You know, he scored probably the most crucial penalty other than Drogba's in the penalty shootout.
Yeah, wonderfully.
He was instrumental in us getting to the Europa League final the next year and winning it. You know, he's won a lot of stuff with Chelsea and been a big part of that.
And a character.
He's a huge character in the dressing room. I've met him. He's an absolutely lovely guy as well. He's the archetypal, you know, what you want from a modern footballer. In other words, you know, he will engage with supporters. Carroll, you know. Mm. I mean, he's just lovely to supporters. He does great things when most of them sit there counting their money and not engaging with the supporters at all. There is a huge amount to love with him, and I wish him nothing but the best. And I actually, you know, have no problem with the fact that he's leaving to Arsenal, because I said on a purely footballing side, I think he is on the downward curve when it comes to playing for Chelsea, so it's not a huge loss,
and
I don't think.
It must have been difficult for him as well if Frank told him the truth and said, I'm not convinced you're going to start on
Sunday. And he wants to play. He's 32. He wants to play. Why not?
Yeah, and also the implication being also that perhaps if he does play Zuma with Christensen, that'll actually be a slightly more mobile couple of centre-halves.
Or Rudiger. I mean, they're all quite quick.
Indeed.
I mean, here's the thing, though, Jonathan, and I won't speak ill of Luiz. You know, I'm not worried, per se, that he's going to go and strengthen Arsenal unduly. But I do think, you know, ultimately, we are a weaker squad without him, not least because of his experience.
His experience, completely. But then you've got Frank and Cech there, so you just think, does that add the experience? And I'm sure that Cech was consulted over this, and you wonder whether then the board must have been consulted.
Definitely.
And if they said, wish to go ahead like this, that's what they're going to do.
Definitely.
I mean, the interesting thing is what role Roman played in it, because Roman was very much his champion, as to whether Frank had to speak to him or spoke to Mourinho, who spoke to Roman and said they feel, the managerial setup, that now is the time to allow Luiz to go because he might be disruptive. And he wasn't actually, whether in those 4 weeks since when I had a chat with somebody this morning about this very thing.
And not Blue Squirrel?
Not a Blue Squirrel. No. Not Blue Thong either.
Blue Cheese.
Blue Cheese. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Who was saying that he was grumpiness. He was being a disruptive force. Yeah. Well,
you
can't have that.
This is the other interesting thing, isn't it? Because, of course, Luiz, a lot of the Brazilians, because there's always been a few cliques at Chelsea. There's also been a lot of player power. We've got the Brazilians, we had the Belgians. You know, Frank and Drogs and Ashley Cole and JT were known for sticking it to managers and getting rid of them if they didn't like them.
Yeah.
So, actually, I wonder if this will do two things. One, it will end player power, because Frank's put his foot down and won't have any nonsense. Or two, it will upset the Brazilian clique.
Indeed. Well,
of which there are still Willian and Emerson.
Yeah, but
and Kennedy.
And Jorginho. But,
yeah, but he's new, and I don't think
we have a relevance. No, no.
And he's Italian, technically.
But I'm not even convinced Jorginho would get into the side at the moment. I was just looking at it. So we'll talk about that later.
I have to say, just going back to Louise, what I liked about this, chaps, was the fact that it was all quite quickly done. There doesn't seem to be any ill feeling. Frank Lampard's come out and said, look, we had a conversation. David Luiz has said, my cycle came to an end. There was no nonsense before. This has just come up in the news. It's happened. The players conducted himself professionally. So have the clubs. The moves happen and job's done. Apart from the idiots on TripAdvisor, like we've discussed, there's no other ill feeling. It's just a transfer happening as a transfer should happen.
And I would have liked it if he hadn't done his celebration in the Arsenal shirt when he first put it on. But having thought about that, that's a typical David Luiz.
He didn't do a Koscielny, though, to be fair.
No, he didn't. That was bizarre, wasn't it?
That really wound the gooners up.
It did.
So how is the reception going to be for him when he comes back? Because obviously he came back under PSG and scored in that epic Champions League encounter.
Everybody was a bit dubious about that.
Absolutely, and didn't hold back in his celebrations there.
Fine. I have no problem with that. I hate it when they refuse to kiss, when they refuse to celebrate a goal.
I think you're bang on with that, Chidge. I think when you're a player that's been at a club for a hell of a long time and you are a certified legend, I can understand it to an extent. Yeah. But everyone says, oh, it's great because they showed respect to the team they used to play for. What about the team they are playing for?
Exactly.
Show them respect by
celebrating. If I scored a goal, I don't care who I scored it for, I'd be running around like a loony. The best example of that, actually, was Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank when he came back to the Bridge as a Middlesbrough player. And Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank was an absolute goal pig. He loved scoring goals, and I'm sure if he'd have scored, he'd have celebrated. Anyway, the only real opportunity, well, actually, he fluffed quite a few opportunities, but the best thing of all is he had a free kick from about 25 yards out, which he literally put into Rose Ed.
It was Rose Ed, wasn't it? And
there was a resounding chant from the Matthew Harding end, what the hell was that?
Yes.
And Jimmy actually really responded to the crowd well, and it got a lot of love for that. It was almost as if he'd done it deliberately, actually. But that's how you should come back, I think.
No, but I would cheer him.
I would applaud David Luiz. He's won stuff for us. He's been a really great player for us, So, bottom line is that, look, I'm not that worried, Matt. I've got to be honest with you. Unless things have turned for the worse so much in the last couple of years, Jonathan will validate this. Chelsea, as a bunch of supporters, are usually very generous with players coming back. We don't give them stick. We give them a lot of applause. If they've been good for us, we welcome them back. The only one I can remember over the last 30, 40 years, Gordon Jury, really. He got a huge stick, didn't he?
That was because he said he wanted to move nearer home, didn't he? Back to Scotland, and then
did
just
he,
went down,
he
the,
his,
went to North London.
The other one, of course,
was William Gallas, who said he was going to score an own goal unless he was given the opportunity to leave.
But very few. I mean, mainly they come back and they get a good reception, and that's how it should be, We don't go burning
Juan Mata
their shirts.
Gets huge love, doesn't he? Because that was such a strange transfer.
You'll make me cry. I still weep about
Mata.
I know.
That was just a bizarre transfer because he fell out with Mourinho completely, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
And who else gets a cheer?
It's interesting. There are, obviously, Luiz is the 10th player to now play for Chelsea and Arsenal in the Premier League. I know that football only seems to have started in 1992.
This is a good quiz question, Matt.
Well, chaps, I was going to put that to you.
Well, Gallus, obviously, for starters.
Correct.
Petr Cech, David Luiz.
Mm-hmm. Benayoun.
Benayoun, very good. I was going to say Benayoun. I'm struggling after that.
A current player up front for Chelsea.
Giroud.
Oh, right, so both ways. I thought you meaning... Yeah, I know what you mean.
So have played for both clubs. Not moving directly between, but
I'm thinking Chelsea players that have gone to Arsenal. Fabregas, Gas. I'm struggling.
Check.
We said check.
Yeah.
We got six.
Nicolas Anelka.
Well done.
Fabregas.
We said Fabregas.
My bad. Emmanuel Petit.
Oh, Petit. Manny Petit. Of course.
One I don't think you said was Cashley himself.
Cashley Cole. Mm. The other one, actually, is Diarra.
Lasana Diarra.
There you go. Pulled it out of the bag.
That's one I'd never have got.
I know. I don't know where I got that from. Goodness gracious me.
It appeared.
Miss all the obvious ones. Cole.
Yeah, of course.
For God's sake.
Anyway. Special mentions, by the way. George Graham, obviously.
Oh,
of days
fantastic.
Gone by. Rocky Rocastle, of course.
Oh, David Rowe. Yeah. He's a really unusual player, Rocastle. He was loved by both sets of fans hugely. And I remember after he died, there was a, You know, I think we might have played Arsenal, and I think there was a bit of a joint Rocky Rowcastle chant.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
I'm afraid
very well loved man.
I was old enough to see George Graham play for Chelsea.
I have a picture of him in my bedroom.
With
not just him or with you, but it was the 65 League Cup winning squad.
Yeah.
And Alex Stepney is in that squad. Believe it or not.
He played once for Chelsea.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. How bizarre, right?
Yeah, yeah. Then he went on to play for Man U, of course, in the European Cup final.
And they played in blue, why they won, obviously.
Well, obviously why they won.
How appropriate
but
we're talking about Man United.
Graham was one of my favourite players at the time, and I was distraught when he got sold. I just couldn't get it. I didn't get my head round. And then Baldwin made the trip across, and obviously he was the sponge was a very different kind of player.
Tommy Baldwin, of course, he came from Arsenal, didn't he?
Yeah, they did. It was almost a swap.
I'm interviewing him next week.
Oh, are you? Good stuff. Good stuff. Ask him why he was called the sponge.
I know why he's called the sponge.
But ask him.
For the same reason I probably should have been.
Yeah.
We won't talk about that.
We won't indeed.
Just to finish up on David Luiz, guys, before we go on to those who have remained at the club and we just kind of discuss the transfer activity as a whole. I think this is a really positive step by Frank Lampard because he's shown real authority here.
Yeah.
And we talk about player power. I don't think that Luiz was threatening that. But is there a danger when you have a player like Luiz who was told he's probably not going to play, that the dressing room just slightly becomes a bit toxic with someone who's hanging around the place, who wants to be playing, is fed up at the fact that he isn't?
Well, I think Malouda was an example of that, wasn't it, over in the past, where he didn't. He just...
He went to the equivalent of Naughty Boy Nets, didn't he?
He did.
He's a naughty boy.
He can become completely toxic. But
you don't want disruptive people around.
Yeah, and I suppose that once the head is cut off and they're off, there's nobody for them to gather round.
Yeah.
So I wonder how William's going to feel about this.
Well, I don't think William's going to be around much longer anyway. This is the point.
Yeah, because Pulisic is probably the replacement.
Well, indeed, and we've actually got that situation now. But I actually think that that's also very important because, you know, who knows? Because we're not there. That's the reality. We're not there. But if I was there and I'm Frank Lampard, I'm thinking, you know, I do need to exert my authority because, you know, I'm not going to get it automatically like a manager who's been around for 20 years will. Plus the fact I've got a lot of young, promising talent coming through. I don't want their heads to be turned by some of the senior pros who are going to be disruptive.
Yes. It was interesting. There's an article by Alan Smith in the Standard this evening tried to make out that it was a weakness that he'd had to get rid of Luiz and Luiz had somehow manipulated
him. Well, Alan Smith.
Complete nonsense.
You know, but it's interesting, isn't it, how you can argue that other way?
Absolutely, yeah. And I understand where he's coming from, and he has been in a dressing room, but I think that's ridiculous. And I think what it does show is that Lampard has put real faith in the likes of Zuma, in the likes of Tomori and Christensen,
very much so Tomori.
Well, Tomori's got the chance now that Luiz is gone. Yeah. I'm not having it from Alan Smith. No. I mean, it's basically Arsenal Pravda. I mean, get a life, man.
And I think I listen to...
The most boring commentator in football, by the way.
Okay, so says Stamford Chidge.
Yeah, he does.
Hope you're listening, Alan.
Come after me, big man.
There is.
I'll bite your
I was
kneecaps.
Listening to a comment from Frank Lampard as well, and the fact that he said he feels there's a certain clarity around the club and the fact that you haven't been able to make transfers. Almost, he's done very well to spin this into a positive. And if you look at the window, obviously, Kovacic has come in, Pulisic was bought back in January. And the fact that for a club who couldn't sign, you've raised, in excess of £100 million, going to be a bit more than that once the Morata deal goes over the line. Yep. So it's been a pretty decent window for Chelsea.
Yeah, I think so.
But I think the Luiz transfer muddied it a bit, unfortunately. I think without it would have been... Well, that's interesting. Let's see what happens. But somehow that disempowered the whole Chelsea thing a bit. As if to say, "Girl, you can't even keep hold of your best players."
Yeah, but
that
was
an angle.
He's not our best player.
I'm only saying that because from other people's views. You know,
But I think there's
We don't think we watch the club. We watch the team. We know how inept he can be amidst in a smaller performance like Bournemouth last year, for example, terrible.
Yeah, but they were all inept.
But also then he raises his game for big matches. Look, so it's almost left to say to the Gunner fans, yeah, he'll be there for the big games, but be prepared for the smaller games. He'll disappear.
Let's not rewrite history here because we can't on the one hand say, you know, yes, he is prone to errors, but so are most football players. Football players make errors.
But we've been watching him for seven years, though.
I know, and the reality is I think he's a hell of a good defender. He's a world-class player playing in a very good team. Let's not deny that or try and ignore that fact. What shouldn't be ignored is the fact that he's 32, he's getting to be past his prime.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this is not
as,
a 20...
As am I at that age.
Aren't we all, darling? But the bottom line is... You can't just say, oh, he's, you know, like, you know, if you follow that whole media agenda that, oh, he's a PlayStation player. He's always making mistakes. He costs Chelsea
games. No. But
we're not. That's not what we're saying, is it?
Nonetheless, no. But we are allowed to comment on the fact.
Oh, he makes an error or two.
Yeah, but
and again.
He makes. He has made some appalling errors.
Yeah, but I think this is kind of tail wagging dog. I think because you know he's made a few you know high profile ricks, then everybody looks for them, and I think you get kind of cognitive dissonance by doing that. Right.
Okay.
Because I think what it means is that everybody looks for the Luiz mistake, whereas actually there's probably somebody else making a mistake that you don't see.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, John Terry was consistently the
man. Can't say anything bad against John
Terry. Who didn't make any mistakes.
Can't say anything about John Terry.
But that's the point.
John Terry's perfect
in
every way.
He was perfect. That's the point. He was. But he didn't make the same kind of errors that Luiz made.
Club propaganda, if ever I've heard it.
But
before.
He's a different kind of player. You see, the thing
completely.
About Luiz is he takes risks.
Absolutely. But also, the other thing he does is people always then have that debate whether he should be playing midfield because he always comes forward out of position. Yeah. So they should be prepared for that. I'll cheer him. I think he's been wonderful for the club. Yeah. But at the same time, I'm allowed, having seen him play so many games, to say, when he makes an error, it's bizarre because he'll do something like miss the ball completely.
He has what I would call brain farts.
Yes, indeed.
And I have them every Sunday between 3 o'clock and 7 doing the Love Sport Fans Forum show. If you want to hear somebody doing brain farts for fun, listen to that show, mate. Okay.
You have to say
Matt knows because he's been on there laughing when I've done them usually.
And I've heard that term, brain fart. It's almost ingrained in my brain, I have to say. And Luiz, obviously, the interesting thing is that you did get money. He kind of broke that mould of you signing
players.
Why
didn't we get more?
Sorry?
Why didn't we get more money for him?
8 million's all right. I'm a bit surprised, though, because 2-year contract.
Yeah, that's my point.
We might get a bit more, actually. Yeah.
And you didn't. You broke a mould there, right? Because you never used to give contracts to players over 30.
Ever. Well, that's what some
really
people have said.
There.
People have cited that as an example of why he's let the club down, is because they gave him this extra year. And look what he's done. He's left immediately. But, you know, it doesn't matter. I don't care about that. But that's why I don't understand why they didn't get 16
good
million.
Good luck to him.
16 million for him.
Yeah, good luck to David Luiz.
Yeah, indeed.
He won't do well at all.
Apparently, the interest spanned all the way back to January 2018, we're led to believe. But others who moved out yesterday on a frantic deadline day.
It was a bit, wasn't it?
Danny Drinkwater.
Yeah. Loaned to Burnley.
Why loaned? Because they pay half the wages, don't they?
Why can't they sell him?
Well, they don't want to pay him allegedly 100 grand a week, which is what his wages are.
I think that's a good, good signing by Burnley.
He's not
a bad player.
No, he's not. But what a disastrous signing, ultimately.
Oh, I know.
You know, Sarri wouldn't play him. And he didn't play under Conte even, and there was the theory that actually he never bought him anyway, and the board bought him as a panic buy just because they thought we've got Kante, we'll play somebody next.
I think there may be some truth to that. But fair play to, I hope he does all right there. Actually, I've got nothing against him. I think the interesting thing is Matt. Well, there are two interesting things in this. I mean, you know, because I'm such a sweetheart, I've actually, as you'll notice, Jonathan, in the notes, I have detailed Chelsea's Premier League squad as it stands at the moment, which is quite interesting reading, but. We've still got Bakayoko, Kennedy and Zappa Costa, three of the three players that people expected to leave some way, shape or form. But of course, although this is highly unlikely, given that it's Bakayoko, Kennedy or Zappa Costa, the European transfer window is still open. So
yes. No, I think all three of them will go.
You think they'll go?
Yeah.
Who on earth will buy that lot?
Well, I think isn't Bakayoko supposed to be going to Galatasaray on loan?
Oh, really?
Yes, that was...
Knowledge, mate.
Yeah, hey. Kennedy, I think he'll hang on to.
It's probably public knowledge. It's just I haven't actually bothered to research it.
It is. And,
I heard Matt and giggle. That was usually a sign.
Zappa Costa has been associated with going back to Serie A. So there's
Sarri or Syria?
Yeah, both of those, yeah.
I do feel for Zappa Costa. I think he's had a bit of a torrid time. And there was a game towards the end of last season. I can't remember which one it was. When the whole Sarri out thing was in proper overdrive, and he came on for someone in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, that was the United.
No, that was United.
Match.
Was it United?
Came on for Aspie. That's what I needed. That I left.
That's a collective groan.
That's one of the only times I've ever left Stamford Bridge before the final whistle.
Really?
I just couldn't take it anymore.
Because we were 2-0 down. Instead of bringing on two attackers.
Against you lot,
of all people,
in a cup match.
He would not get away from the 4-3-3, so he just replaced Dave.
I just did my nut.
Aspilicueta with Zappa Costa.
I left.
It was appalling.
You know those old cartoons where a character, you know, when they can't do speech bubbles, but they just it looks like wire wool coming out of their mouth.
I do, and that was you.
That was me. I left in a huff like that.
Even I, in my eerie in in the boudoir of the East Stand Middle, was forced to say, "Oh, for goodness sake!
Goodness gracious me, you said.
Yes, I did.
I said something very similar, but not very similar at all.
Yes, indeed.
Well, that very much did epitomise the Sarri era. We're not going to dwell on it because he's gone, but he was very much a like-for-like manager, wasn't he? He couldn't go, I'm going to bring off this man and make a real tactical change.
It was very much like Barclay.
And yet,
weirdly, Zappacosta, by the end of the season, had actually looked more like a Sarri player than nearly anybody else. Because one of the things he could do, which Dave can't do, is centre. And so he was getting him very advanced because they were all pressing and he was up there. And the ball was coming into the middle decently, which was one of the problems with Aspilicueta.
Yeah, but the cross-come shot.
Yeah, but that terrible about that was say that again?
The cross-come shot.
Yeah, that's it. Sorry, yeah, the emphasis was in the wrong place. But the
You're such a voiceover artist. Don't direct me, sunshine.
Of course, I forgot. It's Sir Chidge. But he set a precedent that he never ever achieved again, didn't he?
We've had so many players who've done that, haven't they? They've scored an absolute worldie on their first game.
One of the worst, though, was Robert Fleck scoring for Norwich against us with an unbelievable volley. And then, lo and behold, he gets bought by Bates. Never again. Never did anything like that again.
Listen, I think Matt should know this, really.
What about you and me?
No, okay. About Zappacosta. There's a chance that Zappacosta might actually go back to his day job of being the keyboard player in the Sparks.
In Sparks, yeah. No, they were just Sparks.
Silent.
Not the Sparks.
Silence.
Sparks. Just Silence. Sparks. Yeah.
I mean,
this town ain't big enough for the both of us.
That deserved tumbleweed, I think.
Yeah, it did. It's a
very old joke.
Because he doesn't actually look like Russell or Ron Mayall. He doesn't look like either of them.
He can name both the Sparks.
They're Sparks, not the Sparks.
Yeah, right, whatever.
Happy to say, I've got no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. Big hit. Number one.
This town ain't big enough for the both of us.
Oh, okay.
That's all right. We know this song.
Okay, Mr. Kidd, there we go. I now exactly know what you mean. Just before we move on from the transfers, I'm just going to quickly hark back to Danny Drinkwater. Yes. And I really feel like Chelsea missed a trick there. And I know that you signed, it was almost a case of signing English players because you had to. You had to fill a quota.
Yeah, yeah.
But you had a central midfield pairing. And this isn't a popular opinion because a lot of people go, oh, no, he just wasn't good enough. But you had Conte and you had Drinkwater who won that title with Leicester, who had a great understanding.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for one reason or another, whether it was his hair transplant and his time off for that, it just didn't seem to work with Danny Drinkwater.
Did he have a hair transplant? Yes, he did, didn't he?
Absolutely.
Of course he did. He's got a good fine head of hair.
That's why Conte didn't play him. He was jealous.
He was jealous.
Absolutely.
You've got a better rug than me.
No. Can we just get this right, please? Drinkwater had a hair transplant.
I didn't know that.
Whereas Conte has had a weave plus a hair transplant because you can get those done, you see. And I know all about that.
He's had numerous. He's flown all over the world. I believe he went to Canada at one point,
what,
Conte.
Drinkwater? Conte.
Conte's had numerous because he was obviously completely gone.
His
hair transplant, I mean, we're going to talk about hair transplants now, is something quite remarkable because, like you said, he has had a weave where it's almost glued on, massaged into the head. And he always, whenever it rained, I don't know whether you noticed, he always got a member of staff to give him a hat because as soon as it rained, it caused problems. So he always wears a hat when it rains.
I've got a close relative who's had
exactly the same thing, so I'm really up on it.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
Matt's got a theory about goalkeepers with
hats.
With dodgy barnets.
Oh, yeah.
I was on a show with them once. And they were talking about you and Dickie were talking about it. I remember.
I have a theory about players' self-esteem
when they lose their hair.
Honestly, I'm sticking to it. And when you look at the likes of Wayne Rooney, who was really struggling, and in that season, that 2010-11 season, although he scored that great goal against Man City, he was really, really poor. Really poor. That was a fortunate goal at a time when he wasn't playing very well. At the height of his hair loss, if you remember, he had an awful World Cup.
Yep.
Came back from the World Cup, had his hair done, and was brilliant in the following campaign.
What he should have done, that's a very good theory, was to have grown his hair long at the side and done the Bobby Charlton comb over, and there'd have been no problem whatsoever. Or the Ralph Coates comb over, or even the Bill McGarry comb over.
Bill McGarry?
Was it Bill, the Wolves manager, who in a dreadful interview once with Motson or somebody like that, the wind blew and it came right off. And was down by his shoulder for the whole of the interview.
Right.
So he was bald with an enormous bit. And he was so embarrassed he didn't put it back because it would just blow off every time.
I hope that's on YouTube.
We must look for it.
By the way, I found out something really amazing in the context of this today is that apparently, and I can't name names because it'd be very unfair, but somebody who lost their hair at a certain age, right, has become vegan And since then, his hair has started to sprout.
Oh, dear me.
So there we go.
But at the same time, he's been visiting Harley Street.
No.
It really has been sprouting.
This is down to meat, is it?
It's called hair loss.
I don't know, diet maybe.
There are so many theories out there, but going back to my argument, I honestly think...
We should have given you more. That was a great argument.
No, that's fantastic. I liked the tangent.
But just to re-segue this and refold it back into the recipe. I'm using the imagery of the of something on the kitchen, on the work surface.
For anyone who can't, well, you can't see, of course, but Jonathan Kidd's hands are going quite, absolutely.
I am folding everything back in.
The theory
at the time was that Conte wanted to buy all these Italian players. And the board wouldn't have it.
The older the better.
And he wanted to buy Cialini. Who's the other one? Chiellini, Bonucci, and Llorente. He wanted to buy them all on 2-year contracts. The board wouldn't have it, and he disappeared and turned his phone off, leaving the board in a position where they had to buy some players. And Drinkwater was one of them for that very same reason, so that he could play with Kante. And then he then threatened to leave, but they had came to some kind of an agreement, and he didn't leave. But it meant that this was a purchase that he wanted nothing to do with, and that was the reason.
And he never picked him as a result.
Madness.
Yeah.
Madness, how that can happen at a football club. But that is awful. Isn't that a sad indictment of the modern game? I mean, that shouldn't be happening. And Danny Drinkwater, and we talk about this a lot, and we talk about the fact that clubs should do their due diligence on players. In this case, obviously, it was something completely different. But players and managers, when going to a club, should be doing their due diligence. And Danny Drinkwater obviously saw Chelsea as a step up, just like Scott Parker did all those years ago. Yeah. But Danny Drinkwater should have thought, yes, Chidge, you're doing the David Brent Bunce thing to me, 100%. He saw the money, he saw the Yankee dollar. However, if Danny Drinkwater wanted to play top-level football consistently, have a chance of being an England regular, he should have thought, do you know what? Going to Chelsea is not going to help my chances. I will stick at the Champions.
Why don't they think like that? You know a lot of footballers.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know a lot of footballers, but they're all kind of my age, so it's a bit irrelevant. You know a lot of modern footballers. Why do they do it?
It's a really tough one. I think when you speak to a lot of footballers, they say, look, I've got a family to look after. My career's only going to go to, 35, 40 if you're a keeper. If you're lucky, you've got to think about your future. Did a great interview with Dean Kiley once, the goalkeeper played for many years in the Premier League, and he said that, you know, all these names are banded around to describe us, ruthless, mercenary, tearaway, just going after the money. He was like, absolutely not. I just went everywhere where I knew I was going to play football and I knew I was going to earn money. If that upset the fans, so be it.
But no, that doesn't, because that sounds quite decent. But, you know, Danny Drinkwater went to Chelsea, got paid a fortune, but never played. Where he could have gone somewhere else or stayed at Leicester and still earned, more money than I'll earn in my lifetime, and played football every weekend.
I think that maybe somewhere Danny Drinkwater on some level thought, do you know what, maybe I will play in the back of his mind. And he thought, and I do think some of these footballers think, crikey, I'm never going to get a chance to move to Chelsea. Never thought I'd get to Chelsea when I got released from Man United. You look at the likes of Scott Sinclair, who got the chance to move to Man City. Of course he's not going to turn that down, because, crikey, Roberto Mancini wants me to sign for the Champions. I'm going to go and play for Man City.
That's a good point.
In the end, it took his career backwards. But I guess if you've got the opportunity, like a Jack Rodwell is another example, if you've got the opportunity, you've got to give it to yourself, to the little boy, like Robin Van Persie said when he went to Man United. The little boy in me was screaming, you've got to make this move.
Yeah, well, I can understand that, but it all seems a bit weird.
But it's a shame because, as you say, the pairing with him and Kante was fantastic for Leicester. He had a fantastic season for Leicester. Right. And we were hoping that would be duplicated. But in the end, I'm not convinced that he then made any effort to get into the first team. He's just taking his money.
Yeah, but we don't know what happened. I mean, and it's not beyond the realms of possible. I mean, we know, for example, that Sarri would deliberately freeze players out, Gary Cahill.
Yes.
We heard all about that. And Conte was the same. Some managers are like that. They just decide, you're not for me. And they just don't even bother speaking to you.
Yeah. Well, obviously, none of them is going to be actually associating with any of the youth, because, as we've seen, they didn't go and watch the youth because they're not relevant to them. They're just focusing on the players that they're interested in.
Thank God we've got a manager who will now.
You mentioned Gary Cahill there.
Yeah.
Part of me is slightly surprised that he never got the big goodbye at Chelsea, right? He came on for the final couple of minutes.
No, he did, actually. We said goodbye to Gary Cahill.
Yeah, no, he had.
We had a better goodbye with Gary Cahill than we ever had the chance to with Frank Lampard.
Okay.
Yeah. No, he did.
He
this,
just went.
This was put around as a rumour in the press. And in fact, it was even mentioned. I was watching listening to a rival radio programme about this.
There are no rival radio programmes.
Well, for here, yeah, no, that's true. Well, somebody not quite as good as this one.
They were inferior.
Yeah, inferior
products,
one, yeah. And they were saying, and he got, the person doing it on Twitter ultimately got grief because we all just came back and said, no, there was a specific game that Gary
you mean
got,
the ginger one?
And yes, indeed. Yeah. That Gary got seen off and applauded and cheered and and then even at the end of the season he did his own lap of honour to the fans. So that is just not true at all.
So sorry, there was a specific game. So
yes, last game of the season.
Yeah, but he only came on for a couple of minutes.
Well, yeah, but we still got the chance to say goodbye, didn't we? And,
And
then he did the lap of honour.
And then he did, at the end of the game,
at the end of the game,
he did a lap of honour on his own.
The lap of shame.
In front of everybody, and we all then applauded him.
And do you know what, which is right as well, he didn't milk it like a certain other former Chelsea captain. I know I'm not allowed to say anything bad about him, Chidge, but...
No, he's allowed to, though.
Oh,
he was allowed to.
That was far too elaborate.
No, it wasn't. He's allowed to give a speech. We loved him.
You think that? All right,
loved
but
him.
You
we
don't
loved
support Chelsea.
Him.
I don't know anybody
but
at Chelsea who thinks that.
He'd won everything with us. We loved him.
Yeah.
Completely loved him. Yeah, no, no.
Who's the greatest ever... Sorry, Joseph. Who's the greatest ever Man United player in your book?
Brian Robson.
Okay, you're showing your age there. I was thinking you might say Bobby Charlton or something, but... Yeah. Imagine the greatest
Wilf McGuinness.
Imagine the greatest ever Man United player finishing his career. Mm-hmm. How would you lot send him off?
Absolutely. You give him a massive round of applause, which is what United did for Brian Robson at the end of the 93-94 season after they won the double and he captained the team on that final game against Coventry. Dower contest, 0-0. We aren't going to that. But he did in the centre circle at the end of the game. It was lovely. He lifted the trophy. I was more talking about the coming off in the, 23rd minute, making it all a bit
passing of the
baton. That's what I'm alluding to.
Yeah,
of course, giving him a send-off. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm alluding to the changing, the subbing at that time. And he's engineered that. That's all John Terry, right?
The Drogba got carried off, didn't he, by everybody?
Was
that the one where we played Liverpool and they had to do a guard of honour for us, which was the most hilarious thing I've ever seen.
It was very good fun, wasn't it?
I enjoyed that.
Okay, chats, well, Gary Cahill obviously is going to be playing at Crystal Palace next season. An epic introduction to the Chelsea fan show this week, chats. Next up, we're going to be talking about that opening game with Man United.
This is Love Sport.
And this is Love Sport Radio and the Chelsea fan show. Me and Matt Beadle here with the guys from the Chelsea Fancast, Stamford Chidge.
Hello.
And Jonathan Kidd.
Kiddo.
Wonderful. Right, Liverpool are hosting Norwich this evening. That game is coming up in about 20 minutes. We'll be giving you updates through the course of that 90 minutes. But first, we're going to move on to the game on Sunday between Man United and Chelsea, chaps. This is a big one. First time you've faced each other in 15 years. Of course, the opening game of Jose Mourinho's reign at Chelsea.
Ida Good-Johnson.
Absolutely.
In spite of Roy Keane trying to kill him.
Well... You'd expect nothing less.
I would expect nothing less.
No, of course not. That was a 1-0 victory. Yeah. What is it going to be this time around?
I fancy us, you know. But I tell you what, I think there'll be goals. Because they can't defend. We know our defence is possibly a bit leaky.
Unless he's been working on stuff. It was the set pieces were the problem in the pre-season, wasn't it?
Well, they've been a problem
But mind you,
Louise
was absent on a couple of occasions.
But I think set-piece defending has been a problem really since Drogba and Terry left.
It's true,
You know, because Drogba was fundamental to our set-piece defending. But I fancy us, you know. I think United are in far... I mean, it'd be interesting to hear what Matt says actually about this, but I think United are in a far bigger mess than we are. I think, Wan-Bissaka and Harry Maguire are really good signings for them, but they won't have had much time to bed in. And I think they've lost Lukaku, who, okay, I don't rate, but that means all the eggs are in the Marshall and the Rashford basket. And then again, you've got Pogba. I mean, if Pogba doesn't fancy it, it infests in the whole side.
Is he still possibly going to
Madrid? He could do because the European transfer window is still open.
Still open, yeah.
So
it's interesting, though, isn't it?
We are more united... The Man United.
Who will play, Matt, who will play instead of Lukaku? Who is the... will he be playing Lingard from the beginning with Rashford or what?
You would have thought so. You would have thought it would be Lingard, Rashford and Martial. I mean, the fact that United sold Lukaku and didn't need to really rush the sale of Lukaku because the window remains open until the beginning of September for Serie A and La Liga and the Bundesliga. So I don't quite understand... why this happened yesterday. I don't quite understand why this happened without us lining up a replacement. I think that's all a bit odd. The fact that United got nearly £74 million for him, that's fine. But it just underlines Ed Woodward's priorities here and the fact that I would imagine he was at his desk all day trying to sort out that deal with Inter when really that could have been done in a couple of weeks' time. Yes, Inter want him in as soon as possible, but he didn't need to go yesterday. United don't have a replacement. And whether they need a replacement for Romelu Lukaku, I don't know. Whether he's putting his faith in Mason Greenwood, I'm not sure. Alexis Sanchez is also due to come back, but there's been talk today of him perhaps going on loan to Roma. So I would imagine, to answer your question, kiddo, sorry, would be Anthony Martial, Marcus Rashford and Jesse Lingard in behind with Paul Pogba there as well. That doesn't faze me too much, I have to say. It's not the worst thing in the world. What I would say is that United didn't beat any of the top six at home last season.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mind you, did we win against any of the away
we
top
were awful
six?
Against the top. It's one of the worst years we've had since we were beating the top six regularly, yeah, yeah. I think. But I mean, our record, and this is another
at
thing
United,
actually. I mean,
phenomenal.
Remember Frank Lampard's Derby County drew with Mourinho's United in the Carabao Cup and then knocked him out on penalties. So Frank knows what it's like to play up there as a manager and do well. But our record against United has always been one of the best around. I mean, I think it was Neil Barnett, old Spy, put this up on Twitter. But in the last 52 years in the league, we've played 44 times. We've won 13, drawn 20 and lost 11. So basically, we've only lost 25% of our matches up there in 52 years. It's not been too clever recently, interestingly enough. I did my usual bit of research because I'm such a... You can take the boy out of the producer, but you can't take the producer out of the boy, Jonathan.
I've heard that before.
And, yes, especially at the BBC. So I know you did that joke last time. Anyway, in the last 10 Premier League games up at Old Trafford, we've only won twice. The last time we won up there was in May 2013. So... It's not been too good recently.
Which is when United had already won the title,
yep,
as well.
Yep.
You guys were chasing Champions League football.
We would have been just about to win the Europa League in that year. But yeah, I mean, we've drawn four times and lost twice since 2013. So it hasn't been too clever recently. The interesting thing is, it's always been really tight. There's been one goal in it, or it's been a draw, really, going back to 2011 when United beat us 3-1. So... it's going to be interesting. I think you can't really draw any comparison, though. I mean, we're talking, you know, different, completely different sides now.
Oh, absolutely. And it's one of those, isn't it, when you talk about records, absolutely. You can go all the way back to 1994 when you won twice, Gavin Peacock with the solitary goals.
But that's
goals.
What I mean. We've always done
Willie
well
Donachie.
Up there. I mean,
Willie Donachie scored
Kerry
against...
Dixon in 1990, yeah. Those two goals he scored. Remember that? Yeah. They were brilliant.
I was behind the goal when we lost 3-0.
Where are you?
In 70...
I think
just when Ozzy's last season, he was terrible.
There was a match in
Johnson
the
played
there
for
us. There was a match in the '80s at Old Trafford. Gordon Strachan would have been playing because Chel Tell tells a story. This is on a podcast years ago, and he ended up in the players' bar and needed to relieve himself, having had a drink or three, got lost, and ended up suddenly on the Old Trafford pitch.
As you do when one wanders around there. When I say, by the way, behind the goal, I was actually behind where the photographers are, because
I was with
Hugh Hastings.
Really? Well, yeah. Hugh the photographer?
Yeah, and we were both there.
We should get him in here one night, you know.
He lives in Exeter, though.
That's no good, is it?
No.
We'll have to get him on the phone.
Yeah, get him on the phone. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a bit like that, Hugh. It's
incidentally,
brilliant.
As well, I mentioned the Mourinho game. There are three other managers who started their managerial campaign against Man United for Chelsea, which is interesting. Ted Drake, back in the 50s.
What was the result?
Lost 2-0.
Oh. Yep.
Claudio Ranieri in 2000.
3-0,
yeah.
Magic, I love
United
that game.
United were 3-1 up in that game, right?
Yeah, Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank,
yeah.
Boom.
And Tor Andre Flo.
Yeah.
And more recently, the great Avram Grant.
Avram, I thought it was Avram,
in,
yeah.
Stepping
what
in
was
for
the
Jose.
Result there? We
lost 2-0
we?
That
yeah,
day,
lost 2-0.
Yeah. Luis Saha
great
and Carlos Tevez first goal for the club.
I wouldn't use the
match.
Word great associated with Avram Grant. It's sweet
no.
of
you. No, Baron Greenback, maybe.
A lovely man, Avram Grant. I interviewed him when he was down at Portsmouth.
He is a lovely man.
And he had such a warmth to him.
He's a lovely man.
We had this, it was when I was at a certain publication, and we had one of those pull-up boards that you have to picture him by. And as we were sitting down, this is when Portsmouth were in dire straits with finances. We sat down and the board fell to the ground instantly. And he just turned to me and said, no, we cannot pay for this. No. We don't have the money. And I was like, I'm gonna like you, Avram. We're going to get on.
He's lovely. He actually, shortly after he was unceremoniously fired, he met Mark. You remember Marco, who's been on the show?
Yeah, absolutely.
He went to the local pub and had a drink with Marco and a chat with Marco and somebody. It might have been Kelvin, actually. So he's lovely, really. Now, Marco won't have a bad word said against Avram.
He tended just to stare at the grass, though, didn't he? Along with what was it? The rather large Dutch man who was his
Ten Carter. Yeah, he scared the hell out of everybody.
Yes, he did.
But he didn't manage the team. John Terry, of course, and he didn't. Drogba and Lamps.
Of course, they
the
did.
Team.
Exactly.
There you go.
Exactly.
So, I mean, look, I fancy us. I have to say, Matt, I really do. I mean, I think there'll be goals. I'm thinking it might be 3-2 to us.
It'll be
my prediction.
It'll be speedy, won't he? He doesn't press as much as
bring Kerry back.
Yeah. I have this image of watching them both from the north stand, and which shook all the time. The north stand, whenever
the one on stilts.
Yeah. And of the ball being pumped forward, just an aimless kick up the field with somebody looking for them. With Kerry, I think I told him this on the program. Yeah. Kerry and him flicking it, and Speedy just going around the centre half and slotting into the corner.
They
scored lots of goals.
They were brilliant. They were.
He was
those
a tough
two
boy,
goals
Speedy.
That Kerry scored up there, and I think it was about 1990. He was quite late in his career, but they were superb. I mean, I remember one of them. He just hit it first time from kind of up on the edge of the penalty area.
Yeah, I remember it. Yeah.
But it was such a striker's goal.
Yeah.
He didn't even think
about
it.
He had that ability,
didn't
he?
Instinct.
That's why I was so keen on Bamford for a period, because Bamford has that upright quality that that Kerry had as a striker. And it's a shame he didn't make it.
Play the piano. I don't think Kerry can.
No, he can. But I think perhaps that's where Kerry should have been playing the piano.
Maybe.
As a consequence.
Maybe Bamford shouldn't be playing the piano. Maybe he'd had a, maybe,
he scored.
Maybe he would
have
had a Chelsea
career.
He scored
the other day, though, Bamford.
He did.
Just a quick word on team news.
Yes.
Fellas, Lampard has obviously
said
that
we have
N'Golo Kante fit. Rudiger and Willian have been training, but Sunday too soon for them. What do you think about Kante? Obviously got minutes against Borussia Mönchengladbach.
He's not playing him on Sunday, then?
No.
I think you're playing.
What he said was that he will probably play Kante, although he says he's fit but not match fit.
Right.
For Willian, it's too soon,
as
it is for Rudiger. But the interesting thing about that is that I didn't expect to see Rudiger before September.
No, me neither. No, that's interesting.
That's positive.
Yeah.
It's an issue if Kante can't do 90 minutes, which is kind of what it sounds like. Although, you know, we've got Kovacic, who's been decent in pre-season.
Yeah,
so
will he play Jorginho next to
Well,
to
I mean,
Kante?
Who do you think will start then? Who's your starting 11?
Kepa.
Not Caballero?
Funnily enough, no.
Okay,
no, Willie doesn't make it in. Emerson, even though, because Alonso's been all over the place. Christensen and Zuma and Dave, obviously. Yep. I think he'll play not Jorginho. I think he'll play Kovacic with Kante, and he'll play. Who am I missing out? He'll play Mount.
Ross Barkley. You
he'll
think?
Play, he'll no, I don't think he'll play him. I think he'll play Mount ahead of him, because Barkley has unfortunately this terrible tendency to be caught in possession, despite having played out of his skin in the pre-seasons. He still got caught in possession on several occasions, and I think he'll play Tammy up front.
Okay.
And I think he'll play Pulisic.
Yeah, and Pedro.
And Pedro. Yeah.
I pretty much agree with you, apart from the fact that I reckon he'll play Jorginho, not Kovacic, and I think he'll play Barkley, not Mount.
Okay, we're almost there.
But I think he'll play Olly Giroud up front.
Oh, really? So we're not agreeing at all, then?
We're not really.
Out of 11. No, we're not. We're not. I agree with you, but
I think he'll go for experience, because he can bring Tammy in off the bench. He can bring Mount in off the bench.
I don't know. I just think Tammy has, in the last game against who we lost, which was 2-2. Yeah, I know we're about to. I think he gets into positions where he looks as if he's going to score more. He creates chances. He's just not as clinical as Giroud is at the moment.
Absolutely. Well, differences here in the studio as to who is going to start on Sunday. We'll get predictions after this.
This is Love Sport.
It is the Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport, and it's time for Legend of the Week.
See what your club legend was wearing at classicfootballshirts.co.uk. The place for football shirts.
Who is it, Chidge?
Well, I thought kind of as an homage, really, because the fact that we are playing United, I thought actually somebody who you wouldn't normally say he was a Chelsea legend, but I loved him to bits. It was Mark Hughes, who
phenomenal
I kind
player.
Of secretly liked when he was at United, really. I shouldn't really, but I did. True. Wonderful, wonderful volleyer of the ball. But Mark Hughes was brilliant for us. And I think the question that I posed in the running order was he the right player for Chelsea at the right time? And actually, I think he was, because he came in 95, 96... We hadn't really won anything. And you know, he has such a ferocious winning mentality. I have a thing. I mean, and look at the games that he had, you know.
The
Liverpool match, the great
4-2. Yeah, the great 4-2.
Viali and Zola get
Vicenza,
the credit for that.
The great Vicenza.
Yeah, but Liverpool, he turned that match round, really.
Yeah.
Wimbledon in the semi-final.
Yeah.
Wasn't he the one who remarked about Zola giving them twisted blood as well? So, but he was brilliant in that. And the Vicenza, I mean, we would not have made that final had it not been for Hughes almost dying on the pitch for the cause, which is what you want.
The skill of just ball out of midair,
brilliant.
Of chesting it over and heading it, a cushioned header, and then walloping it with his left foot into the corner. Yeah.
But don't you remember? They were all celebrating on the pitch
and he's lying on the ground. Yeah.
That's why they called him Sparky. Because he was spark out, mate.
Always spark out. Yeah, they called him Sparky years before
chaps,
United.
I'm fully on board with
you
this.
You love Mark Hughes,
one of my favourite players of all time, Mark Hughes.
Yeah. Great player.
Leslie Mark Hughes.
Leslie Mark Hughes.
Yeah, his real
Chelsea
name, Leslie.
Chelsea fan as well. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
No, he was boyhood Chelsea fan.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
The interesting thing about Mark Hughes, he did a great book when he signed for United, which was called From Barcelona to Barca, Bayern and Back, when he came back to United. Really interesting story. If you get a chance to read it, just quickly, I was going to do this as a quiz, but we've run out of time. Players who've gone directly between United and Chelsea.
There are loads.
In the Premier League era.
Oh, obviously now you've got me now because my mind's gone a blank.
Mark Hughes, Juan Mata, Nemanja Matic, Mark Bosnic, and Juan Seba Varon.
Yeah.
There we go. Honourable mentions, Mal Donaghy and Raul.
I was going to say Mal Donaghy, actually, was the weird one that was on the tip of my tongue.
2-2 tomorrow.
2-2?
Yeah.
Sunday.
Sorry, 2-2. Sunday, yeah.
3-2 to us.
Okay.
I'm sure. Brilliant.
Okay, well, 2-2. What did you say, Chid?
3-2.
3-2. Okay, that is that. We will see what that score will be next week.
We'll be gloating next week.
We will be gloating next
week. Or hiding.
It is the Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport. We'll see you next week. Good evening. This is Love Sport Radio. Me, Matt Beadle, with you through until 10 p.m. this evening. The Chelsea Fan Show is down. Next up, we've got the Transfer Rumour Mill. And at 9 p.m, it is the Millwall Fan Show with the guys from No Look Talking. But yes, next, it's the Transfer Rumour Mill. The final one of the summer. We've been doing these all summer, and now it's done. I, for one, am glad to see the back of these. No more transfer rumour, conjecture. It's all done. But of course, there are still deals to be made to the Bundesliga, to Serie A and to La Liga. We don't know whether some Premier League players are going to be going out, but those who have come in, we're going to be getting reaction from Spurs fans, from West Ham fans. We're going to be speaking to Oldham Athletic midfielder Giles Koch, and we will be getting some reaction from the Bundesliga and Serie A as well. All of that and more after this.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.